We're streamlining Web3 UX. We are making it easy for the mainstream adoption to happen, for people like our moms and our brothers and our non-crypto friends to be able to access this industry and unlock the benefits of Web3.
Hey everyone, before we begin the episode, I just want to let you know that the team from Virtual Lab has been kind enough to give us a special bonus. Please stay with us until the end and I will announce to you guys what the bonus may be. Thank you. Enjoy the episode. Hello everyone and welcome to Colors of Web3 and Entrepreneurship. My name is Lum, your typical Web3 host, and this is episode 18. Here I am today with Jeremiah Kim and Jose, who are both from Virtual Labs. Jeremiah and Jose, can you give us a quick intro about yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. Super happy to be here, Lam. Thanks for having us on the show. So my name is Jeremiah. I'm the head of partnerships for Virtual Labs. So I'm in charge of all of outreach whenever we're doing a campaign with other platforms and whenever we launch with another platform like we did last week, which I'm sure we'll get into later in the show. So I'm super excited to be on and really, really happy to be here.
Yeah, happy to see everyone. My name is Jose. I'm the founder and CEO of Virtual. So my background is in traditional economics from Yale, and I dropped out to start the company 2 years ago. And now we are launching and doing cool things.
Awesome. Yeah. So one thing I'd like to know about all my guests on the show is that I'd like to know more about your background. Maybe if you guys can share with us your background, what you did before you begin your company, if you had any previous jobs or any other professional experience, feel free to share that with us. Maybe anything before Web3 days, what did you do? And then post Web3 leading to the current position. Yeah. Jeremiah, you can go first.
I'd be happy to go first. So I actually recently graduated from Harvard. I studied pure math and I got a secondary in economics. Formerly, I've done a ton of different like internships. I worked at a law firm. Most recently, I did investment banking. I did private equity before that. And I've also done professional research. So I have an article published under my name. And I'm actually going to publish one of the chapters from my senior thesis in mathematics and economics probably in March or in April. So I'm pretty happy about that. So yeah, I have a background in finance and in mathematical research.
Wow, that's awesome. I'm just curious about the thesis. Is it have to do with game theory or anything like that?
Not exactly. It has to do with what's called social choice theory, which is about how mathematicians and economists translate individual preferences into a collective group preference. So yeah, not too much on the game theory side.
It sounds very difficult, though. I'm sure there's a lot of math involved in that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a pretty cool experience, like writing the thesis. My advisor, he actually won the Nobel Prize in 2007, I believe. So it was awesome to work with him. My work is really an extension of his work. So it was a really cool experience. It was hard, for sure, but definitely worthwhile.
That's really impressive. Yeah. I'm sure you run across Nobel laureates a lot in Harvard.
Yeah, there's a handful. It's pretty special to work with one on like an individual level, but you know they walk around, they're casual.
It's awesome. Yeah. Jose, what about you?
It's funny because my background is in game theory, so that's what I focused on when I was in uni. I've actually taken that to sort of form the foundations, the non-cryptography parts of the technology we're working on, so the virtual engine and the incentive alignment that's necessary for that. For my background, I mean, I've had stints in consulting, in startups before, in logistics. Also, I own a few properties, so real estate, being a landlord, it's my primary income as I don't pay myself through the company. And I have I've been in blockchain, I guess, for 6 years now, mostly in trading in the beginning. So that's the background of traditional finance that got me into crypto. So I was first a Forex trader and then blockchain, and then starting and founding Yale Blockchain, and now to Virtual Labs. So actually it was first Entropy and first something else before that. So we've had a few iterations, but it's all in all my first real company, my first real foray and project in Web3.
Wow, impressive. So you said you began like in blockchain Web3 like 6 years ago, right? So I think you have already experienced like two cycles then as a trader,
like just about Web3 yeah.
cycles.
And yeah, this one will be bigger.
Yeah, I'm sure this one is bigger. I mean, just FYI for the audience, we just today as of the recording day, the what is it, Bitcoin ETF just got finally approved, right? Yeah, so that's quite a big news for the whole industry.
Yeah, yeah, and I think it started trading like this hour. So let's see how the market's doing.
20 minutes.
Yesterday wasn't really? Too much of a price movement, which I was kind of surprised by.
Oh, we're certainly getting it now.
Market's up almost, yeah, market's up 9% right now. So definitely doing pretty well at the moment.
Yeah.
It's a wall impressive. Of green. Oh, that's not going to come through.
Yeah, well, it's, yeah, it's a bit hard to see, but yeah. Yeah.
Trust me, I'm right. It's green. And it's beautiful.
Yeah. So, yeah. And Jeremiah, I actually would like to know the same question. Like, how did you get into Web3? Like, what was the first thing you learned about Web3 or blockchain in general or crypto?
Yeah. So I think I bought like my first, I think it was Ethereum or Bitcoin, like back in 2016, like a long time ago. I didn't have much money at the time. I was in high school. And so it was just kind of like playing around, but I never really did anything with it. And I sold it super quickly thereafter. So I've known about the space for a while. And of course, everyone heard about Web3, I think in like 2018 when it was really big and kind of picking up steam. But it was only recently when I kind of met Jose through a mutual friend who I know from school that I really decided to kind of dive headfirst into the world of Web3. And so since that point, we were actually joking this morning, I've become a little bit of a degen. I've been much more involved in the space. And it's been awesome. I mean, it's been amazing to see, even from August of 2023 until now, how much steam the whole industry has picked up. Like, it moves so quickly, and the cycles they swing so wildly. So I'm really excited for 2024.
Yeah, same here. I think it's going to be a great year for us. So before we dive into your current company, can you share with us your hobbies? What do you guys do outside of Web3?
You want to go first?
Sure. Okay, I thought we were getting into a rhythm there, but I'll take it. My primary hobby, as Jeremiah knows, is anything trivia and geography related. I love history, exploring countries and capitals and facts. Anything that is sort of random and has no utility is something that I really enjoy. So I love just learning about the world in that way. I also love to travel, and so I've learned a lot through that, both in terms of culture and in terms of other facts. And I feel like that forms my part of my worldview. I also love playing chess. Not very good, but it's definitely a fun activity to do in between calls, a quick, rapid game. And I love philosophizing too, and thinking about sort of the human condition and how the world works and sort of what our place in it is.
Nice. That's quite a variety of very eclectic tastes that you have over there. Are you a professional chess player? Or do you just play?
No. I'd say I'm actually probably better at poker. Virtual actually started as a poker company. And so that's another thing. Hard to consider that a hobby, as it's so degen. It almost fits into Web3. But they're both fun outlets, just hobbies, nothing to monetize.
I see. It's awesome. Yeah, and you, Jeremy?
Yeah, I can attest. Jose is a much better chess player than I am. I don't play too much chess competitively or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, in my free time, I really enjoy working out. A couple of years ago, I was on the Harvard rugby team until I tore my ACL, my MCL, and my meniscus. And so that was the end of my rugby career. But I've continually worked out since then. I recently moved to New York. And one of the things I'm focusing on now is in my free time is trying to find a new gym kind of near where I live. So I'm touring all the local gyms and checking them out. So that's been fun. Yeah, I also really love to read. Like, I'm reading Pachinko right now. Whenever I go for runs, I'll listen to audiobooks and podcasts. So, I think I consume like a pretty good amount of media. I also love to travel, like when I have the opportunity. About this time last year, I was in Nicaragua, which was really fun. It was my first time kind of being there. It was super beautiful and amazing. And then obviously we all met in Istanbul, which was also an amazing experience. And yeah, it was very cool to kind of see the city and see the sights when the conference was not happening. So that was awesome. And I also really love to try different restaurants, especially with my girlfriend. Like, we'll go around, get different cuisines, try like really fancy to street food. And that's also just been super fun, you know, and New York City is probably one of the best places in the world to do that. So, yeah.
It's awesome to hear. Yeah. I remember when we met in Istanbul, I think you said you're doing some run. Did you do some city run around there back then?
Oh yeah. Well, in Istanbul, we had whiteboarding sessions as a team from like 6 PM until 1 or 2 AM. And so the runs would always happen at 6 AM. So I was never able to make it cause I was up like super late the night before. But maybe we're going to Eat Denver in maybe a month and a half here. So if there are runs happening, maybe I'll make those.
You sure you don't want more whiteboarding sessions? They're so fun.
Maybe more whiteboarding sessions. We'll see.
We're close by now, at least. I'm in Connecticut, so I'll probably be moving to New York this summer. It'll. I agree with you there. I wouldn't consider myself a foodie per se, but I also do love trying out foods. If you ever come by New Haven, there is a phenomenal Indian fried chicken mac and cheese place. Sounds like the most eclectic assortment of food you could ever have, but it is so wonderful. I was considering just aping all of my, or even all of the virtual funds into this restaurant just so they can expand and become a chain, because they just started like a month ago and I want more people to experience. It is no joke the best food I've ever had. It is so good. It is absolutely scrumptious.
Wait, what type of food is that?
It is Indian fried chicken mac and cheese. Just try and fathom that right now. I'm salivating as I'm thinking. I have some more in my fridge.
Indian fried chicken mac and cheese. First time I heard in my life.
But, good.
Okay. Yeah.
So good.
That sounds pretty amazing. Yeah. Definitely have to try. Maybe next time when I'm in the US.
Yeah, that's how you know you're in the US, when you put these three things together. And it's delicious. That's how you know.
Oh my God. Yeah.
That's awesome. So without further ado, let's go ahead and deep dive into your current company. Jose and Jeremiah, feel free to share your screen at this time or share any documents that you guys have.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe Jose, if you want to share the pitch deck.
Yeah. You know what? Before we get into that, let me just lay it down. Like, what are we even talking about? What industry are we in? Why are we here?
Sure.
If I had to summarize that just in a few sentences, I'd say that we're streamlining Web3 UX. We're making it easy for the mainstream adoption to happen, for people like our moms and our brothers and our non-crypto friends to be able to access this industry and unlock the benefits of Web3. So how do you, specifically in gaming, so we're focusing on gaming to begin with. So how do you take the value of Web3? So that's going to be, you know, you own your own assets, interoperability, and fragmentation of incentive alignment. So allowing yourself to grow with the company, taking those paradigm shifts and combining them with the Web2 UX that we are accustomed with. So that's no wallet pop-ups, instant loading, and no goddamn gas fees. Excuse my language. How do we combine those two things together? And if that question had an answer, the answer would be virtual labs. So that's our mission. That's what we're doing. And I can go into some detail now if you'd like.
I like your summary. Yeah, actually, that makes perfect sense. So yeah, eliminating some of the cumbersome UX to get to the, what is it, ideal or the seamless experience, right? For the user, yeah, in gaming.
So scalability, usability together. That's the goal. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, in Istanbul, we had the event called Workable, and the whole purpose was for workable Web3, meaning we eliminate these user frictions, we eliminate the barriers to entry, and we really bring the Web2 experience, what everyone is used to Web3, so that it makes onboarding super easy. And yeah, that's what we're all about.
Awesome. Yeah, take it away, Jose.
All right. So that's our sexy logo. That's who we are. Now, what are the details? That's also who we are. Here's who we are. So this is the core team right here. We've been hiring like crazy, so this isn't even updated. We've actually just brought in two new engineers, one from Solana Hackathon, global winner, and engineer from the Mina Foundation just this Monday. So
that's awesome. Congratulations.
I haven't even gotten to have this yet, but this is the core team. We now have 11 members. So myself, Jeremiah, who he's been acquainted with, and then also Nadim and Aria, who I'm not sure, Lam, if you had a chance to meet at
Workable. I have met Nadim actually in person once at Workable. I have not met Aria. I don't think I've talked to Aria, but yeah, I met Nadim though.
You got to meet Aria. Aria is a character. How would you describe Aria, Jeremiah?
Aria is, you know, I think Jose, he is like a leader. He's a groundbreaker. Nadim is really the CTO. I'm in charge of partnerships, so I'm just all smiles. But Aria is our crypto native voice. Like, if we want market insights and we want to understand how users are going to think about our products or about a specific topic, like, we go to Aria because we know that he represents the like average opinion. And I mean, he's amazing at it too. And he's often right. So he's, he's actually a medical doctor as well. He lives in Iran. So he's pretty pivotal to the team.
Aria's a character. Aria's a character. We love him.
That's impressive. By the way, what is Defiant?
Oh, it's one of the top applications in DeFi.
Okay. In a certain country or?
In the world.
In the world. Okay. Yeah. I haven't heard that, but now I know. Yeah.
You'll have to check it out. Okay. Maybe you'll find it work.
Yeah, for sure.
Pretty much what we're talking about. I think that Web3 is under sort of a Stockholm syndrome with regard to how bad the user experience is. It is not normal. Let me say this louder for people in the back. It is not normal and it is not okay for users to need to store a 12 or 24 word phrase on a piece of paper and then hide it somewhere in your house. And it is not normal to need to pay a certain portion of your wallet every time you want to make an action and interact with a game or any dApp. And it is not normal for an extension to pop out at you every time you want to make an interaction. Because all of these, so a fractional paying a bit of gas, and every move you wait a certain amount of time, and every move you have a wallet pop up and you need to hit it three times, scroll, click, 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 approve gas, wait. That is not okay. And we are wondering why we don't have a billion users yet in this industry. That is why. Look no further. And these solutions are, these problems are completely fixable, and that's what we're doing. And we need to create a user experience where you still own your own assets. If you have a system where every additional interaction with the chain has a cost, whether it's a time cost, a engagement cost, or a monetary cost, then you are going to discourage further use of that chain. An ideal way to interact with any application in Web2 or Web3 is you have sort of either front-loaded or back-loaded cost. You either pay up front, and then that encourages you to use it as much as you want, so that encourages more on-chain activity, or you're able to do it and then you pay at the end, and then you've already paid for it. You need to separate the cost from the utility in the consumer's mind. Otherwise, people are going to dread every time they use the chain, because I don't want to have to be brought out of my immersive first-person shooter game, and then there's a MetaMask transaction that, I'm out of reality. People play games to escape reality, and we're going to charge them every single move they want to make? No. Like, it can't be that way. So that's the problem.
I see. By the way, what's the meaning of the low WAU?
Oh, low weekly active users.
Weekly active user, yeah.
We primarily work with games and applications, and so this is to them. So this goes out to all of you game developers. You should not need to worry about building on blockchain. You should not need to have the frictions of blockchain. Your users should have a good experience. The reason you do not have many users in Web3 is the largest gaming should be the largest industry in Web3. It's a multi-hundred billion dollar. Gaming is larger than movies, social media, books, all combined in the Web2
space. Yeah, it's super huge in Web2. It is huge. Super huge, yeah.
Just so like why there no users in Web3? you're looking at it. This is why there are no users in Web3. So you have bad user experience. It's not fun. You have game developers focusing on building on blockchain, working on smart contract and security and all this bullshit. Then you're not going to have the time to create a fun game. And therefore, you have a boring game with bad user experience, and then you have no users, no low weekly active users in another term.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I was going to say, I remember being 8 years old when my parents bought me and my younger brother an Xbox. And, you know, as a kid, this is like the greatest day of your life. And shortly thereafter, I realized that just because you have an Xbox doesn't actually mean you can do anything. Like, you need to go out and you need to buy games, which I was like, oh man, I guess I'm going to have to do that with my allowance money. And, you know, we would go to the GameStop, good memories, and we had to buy, you know, Lego. I think that was the first game I ever bought, was like the Lego Indiana Jones. Now imagine if you're a kid today and you want to do the same thing, except in a decentralized way. And instead of just paying for the game once and playing, you want to pay, you have to pay every single time you want to make a move in the game. Every time you go to open up a chest, every time you go to complete a level, every time you go to interact with another player, you have to pay some little transaction fee that eventually adds up. I mean, that's insane. That's not a user experience that is sustainable. It's not a user experience that's going to sell, especially not compared to the traditional model of Web2 games, which has worked. And so really, that's what we're trying to eliminate, and that's what we're trying to fix.
And that's not to even mention the mobile problem. I think it's like 45%, something like that, almost half of all Web2 gaming spend happens on mobile devices. Try using the blockchain on a mobile device. Try, I dare you. You're not going to have a fun time.
It's very difficult.
Very difficult. Yeah. So we are desktop first, and by we, I mean the Web3 industry and also virtual labs, but that paradigm must change if we are to succeed and we are to bring genuine Web2 masses to this industry. We need to separate Web3 and Web2 gaming. It's just gaming. It needs to be fun first. It needs to be user-centric. And if we can do this on mobile and on desktop and on Xbox, then we'll have a good time. Otherwise we won't. But that's why we're here. And this is the solution. So what are we doing? We have created a ZK State channel to solve these problems. Sounds really complicated, but I'll break it down for you. It's really not. All it is an escrow account. So it is the promise to deliver funds on chain. So say if the three of us want to play poker fully on chain, right? That means I'm going to take 100 USDC, I'm going to buy in. Jeremiah is going to do the same, Lamb's going to do the same. And then I get a really good hand, right? And then I want to bid. Okay. I'm going to put 10 USDC. That's an on-chain transaction. That's click on MetaMask, open MetaMask, click, 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 approve gas, wait 20 seconds, pay $2 if this is Ethereum, $3, or even 5 cents if this is on Matic. Then Jeremiah wants to raise. He does the same thing. Then Lam, he wants to raise too. And then it comes back to me over a minute later. And then I want to re-raise. And then it's an entire other set of equations. More money, more time waiting, more bad user experience. I'm more focused on MetaMask and worrying that I don't get ripped off on gas than I am about the game itself. And so that's untenable. Now let me show you what we can do with the virtual engine. So instead of having every interaction be fractional and be on-chain, the three of us are going to create essentially a private blockchain. I am going to post my 100 USDC on-chain. I'm going to lock that up. And I'm going to tie it to Jeremiah and Lamb's wallet addresses. Jeremiah is going to do the same thing, and Lamb will do the same thing. We now have basically 100 locked in a contract for each of us, and we are communicating to each other. Think of it as us having our own piece of paper. And on my piece of paper, it now says that the three of us have all deposited. So I have everyone's balance at 100, 100, 100. Now, if I want to raise, I'm going to write down 10 on Jeremiah's paper and on Lamb's paper, and I'm going to sign it. Jeremiah is going to do the same thing, and we're all going to sign each other's paper. So that at any time, if, say, Jeremiah's network connection fails, I have a piece of paper saying that Jeremiah bet, and he signed it. So I can go to the chain afterwards and look, this is immutable. This is my immutable ledger. Jeremiah signed it. It's his signature that matches the one on chain. and I can go and have a fully trustless and decentralized ledger. And in fact, this is actually a more secure way to make transactions than on blockchain, as blockchain relies on a 51% trust assumption. Whereas the ZK state channel, we call the virtual engine, is completely unilaterally fault tolerant. So if Jeremiah and myself try and gang up on Lamb and we say, hey, well, actually, we didn't make this bet, you already have our signature on your ledger, on your device, immutable, and you can post that on chain and prove us wrong. It's as simple as that. And the benefit of this, of course, is that we've posted our on-chain, our transactions first, and we're basically exchanging the rights to the capital that is locked in that vault on-chain. We can do it all through a peer-to-peer connection, meaning no gas, no latency, and no wallet frictions. Our devices are recording our results. We're not interacting with the chain, so we don't need to approve gas. We're not paying gas. And it's at the speed of our network connection. So right now we're communicating to each other in real time, maybe with 50 milliseconds of ping. And that's the speed which Web2 gaming already has that we will result in. And by the way, it'll be even faster than Web2 gaming because we're bypassing central servers. We don't need to communicate through Madison, Wisconsin. We can communicate directly from our device to your device to everyone else's device. That is the solution. And it gets a bit complicated in how we can actually implement these. And we're on 13 different chains and it's live and running now. And I will show you that demo a little bit later in this podcast. This is the simple underlying technology. It's a revolution.
Interesting. So if I understand correctly, then you would create like a separate or a private channel for each of the game. Is my understanding correct?
It's even simpler than that. So these are essentially ephemeral rollups. So when we go to play us three on a poker game, we are the three nodes. We are the three validators. No one else is involved. The game is not involved. Virtual is not involved. The three of us are verifying our own data and each other's data. If, say, Aria, Nadim, and Vitalik want to go play another game of poker on the same poker game, say it's Redotto, then they can go do that. They can go play a game, the three of them, and we're not involved in that. Redotto isn't involved in that, and Virtual isn't involved in that. It's an ephemeral rollup validated by them, by their nodes, by their signatures. And it's basically completely user-based. So if we go play a first-person shooter game or an MMORPG, or we do day trading, which is another use case of this technology, it's as simple as that. So it's not, you have to sort of shift your thinking from being a app chain, blockchain. This is peer-to-peer communication.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So basically it would create, so there'll be many state channel running in parallel? Is my understanding
exactly
correct?
Horizontal scalability, baby.
Okay, cool.
And now there's some more info. We can go, ahead, Lam.
Oh yeah, no, I'm looking at this diagram now. Okay, maybe you can explain it.
There's a few more details, but for the rest of it, I find reading off a pitch deck a bit dull. So I'm going to try and get off of this as quick as possible. We can just have a conversation. So
sure. Yeah.
To run through the rest of this pretty quick, the virtual engine is the technology. It is what we created. It is why we're worth what we're worth. It is who we are. The virtual rollup, the virtual bridge, and the virtual wallet are different technologies made possible by the virtual engine, by the ZK state channel. The virtual rollup, it is essentially the technology I've just described, when we can play poker and we can make all of those different transactions like that, and then post them all on chain at once. The virtual bridge is the ability to do this cross-chain. So I can lock my funds on Manta. Lam, you can be on Polygon. Jeremiah, you can be on Ethereum. And we can play as if there is no friction. Imagine that. And the way we're able to do that, we're able to solve the bridging problem, is because you are locking your funds, right? That needs to be done up front.
Yeah.
If you lock those funds and you keep them there, let me ask a question. Lam, do you know why bridging takes so long and why it costs so much money?
Well, I guess it depends on how it's being done, but typically they need to verify, right? Need to verify that, you know, the transaction on one chain and then maybe transaction on the other chain. Receiving chain.
Exactly. cross-chain finality is hard. You can't reorgs are possible, so you need to wait for finality of the chain, which is longer than the block time itself. You need to make sure if there's a reorg that happens, you can't rug someone and move those funds somewhere else. But if you've already locked your funds ages ago and you've passed the 6-minute mark on Ethereum, then you can go and deliver those funds immediately. You can use the state machine to send those funds instead of blockchain 1 finality plus blockchain 2 finality. So if you're bridging Ethereum to Polygon, 6-minute plus 2-minute, 8 minutes it takes to bridge, it's actually just going to be 20 seconds plus 2 seconds, the time of an Ethereum and a Polygon block time. So you're able to drastically reduce that because you've already locked the funds. And you can do this on any bridge. You can do this on the MetaMask bridge, the Polygon portal. You can do this on any existing bridge. But why would you just have funds waiting locked in a bridge? It wouldn't make sense, which is why when we go to do it, it takes time. But we're giving people a reason to have funds locked so they can play zero gas games. And they can play a game of poker or a first-person shooter with no gas and no friction. And those funds are going to remain locked there. And so then it can become multi-chain as well. And it can become cross-chain. And that means that blockchains begin to compete based on the merits of technology, not based on the merits of who can market the best. Because now if I'm on a small new chain, I can access users on all of Web3. And we don't need to have, you know, a game on Polygon that has the same thing on a game on Arbitrum. And that's worse for every person. It's worse for the blockchains because Arbitrum and Polygon both needed to fund this game. They both need to give grants to compete against the other chain. The games are not better because their success is not driven by the success of their game. It's mostly driven by the success of their chain. Because they can't access users in a different ecosystem, so it's really they only have whoever's already in that chain. And it's worse for the users, because the users need to wait longer for matchmaking. They need to wait longer to trade, to sell something. There's just less liquidity. And so this boosts liquidity, having instant cross-chain access. So that's the power of the virtual bridge.
Yeah, I think I'll jump in here and talk about the virtual wallet, because it really does segue very nicely, which is... So we have this technology, it's the virtual engine. It's powering the virtual rollup, which is very useful for, like Jose was talking about, games and DEXs is another use case. And we have the virtual bridge, so we can make this cross-chain. Well, you might also ask, okay, well, I'm locking the funds. What can I do with this? Well, that is the virtual wallet, which is when you lock these funds. Any protocol or game or dApp or anything that's integrated with the technology then can access those funds and can enable the users to go and use their protocol. And on top of this, you can earn APY for those locked funds. And so actually last week was when we launched this beta testnet. It's the virtual wallet beta testnet, where we've actually, if you go to wallet.virtual.tech, you can see your virtual balance. Currently it's reflected as virtual points. And at the end of our testnet, we will open this up for people to start earning interest. So essentially, you can see how this one technology, although it looks like three disparate use cases, actually, they tie together very nicely. And it's amazing how much flexibility that the ZK state channels can offer.
Impressive. And I think all of this is through the technology of zero knowledge, right? So I guess there's a lot of mathematics underlying this.
You could say so.
Yeah, there's a decent amount. Thankfully, there's some pretty smart researchers out there who are creating packages and, you know, actually doing the mathematics behind the scenes. And so this is more like implementation. But yeah, I mean, ZK itself is it's pretty impressive. Yeah. Actually, I was reading the other day about how ZK is being used even in power grids now, because power grids need to be like fault tolerant. And so we're starting to see, I mean, of course, ZK is extremely popular in crypto and Web3 more generally. But it's even being used more frequently, you know, in non-crypto spaces as well, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, impressive. Yeah, I'm actually very happy to hear that whenever we hear some new use cases popping up, right?
Bold prediction
for this
right here.
New technology.
ZK will be bigger than crypto in 2030. You heard it here first. ZK has applications everywhere, in anything from banking to trustless credit score to the ability to enter bars without saying what age you are, to passports, to gaming, to cryptocurrency, of course. So we're very bullish on the technology. We are really responsible for taking the amazing technology of ZK and taking the amazing technology of state channels and putting them together. And state channels have existed, such as the Lightning Network, for some time. But using ZK, we've been able to make them multi-chain. We've been able to make them have more than two users. And we've been able to make them dynamic so that, for example, Jeremiah and I are playing a game. Lamb can join without needing to close down the existing channel and then reopen it with a new channel. Lamb can join without affecting the existing users, Jeremiah and I. And that's not something that is possible before, and a reason why state channels haven't taken off. Because if you're playing a game, people are coming and going all the time. It would require previously two on-chain transactions every time someone left. Because someone leaves, you have to close it down and then reopen it without that person. Incredible amount of friction. Mm. That is the biggest paradigm shift we're spearheading.
Wow, that's very bold prediction right there. Yeah, I mean, I think only time will tell, right? But I do have high hopes that, ZK, I mean, we already see a lot of application of ZK, right? But I think it's still in the very early stage, as I'm sure you guys probably know much better than I do about ZK. Yeah, I've actually also had a few guests on my podcast, like talking about some certain aspect of ZK, but I think it's still far from ready for like prime time, right? Prime time application is too far. So I think what you guys are doing here is like very much like groundbreaking, I would say.
I appreciate that. We really talked about a lot. We've talked about this allows any recurring interaction to be bundled into two on-chain clicks. So buy in, cash out, everything in the middle is zero gas, zero latency, and zero friction. And the benefits of this, talked about it from the chain's perspective. It allows higher user audiences, higher engagement, as when you have, say, the paradigm that every time you make a move, every time you make a bet or you trade, it takes gas out of your wallet and it takes time and it takes friction, then you're disincentivizing further interactions. However, if you pay in the beginning and pay at the end, and it's a fixed cost, you're incentivized to trade as much as you want and as much as you can in the middle, which increases engagement. Because, oh, look, I've already paid, a sort of sunk cost fallacy. I've already paid. And now it's really easy to do so, but it's hard to leave because I have to pay to cash out. It encourages much higher engagement. And this is the thing that our partners and our integrated games find the most useful. A better user experience where people bet more in the middle because you've completely changed when users pay. And that in itself is very useful. And then, of course, better user experience, no friction. And we're also fully decentralized. There are a lot of scaling solutions out there, such as app chains, such as layer threes, if I can even say that word here. There are a lot of things that we see as compromises to decentralization. And frankly, servers do a fine job if you want to go choose the centralized route. But we want it to be user verified, and we're not going to compromise on that. And so the best and only way to do it, to have a good user experience while having true decentralization and asset ownership and interoperability, is through ZK state channels. And currently, that's only through us. Although we have been noticing, as we get popular, some people are popping up doing something similar.
Interesting. By the way, is your technology everything open source?
No. We are getting a tier one audit. But if we were open source, we would be put out of business very soon.
Okay. Oh, good. So I assume that in your team, there's a few developers or researchers, right? Who are doing the researching for how to apply a lot of this technology.
We have a really great team.
Yeah, we actually... Yeah, we expanded the team. So, I mean, not even a month ago, there were only two developers, and we've now since expanded to five. So we've definitely expanded the capacity, and our speed has increased tremendously. I mean, it's been pretty incredible to see the shift in less than a month. So it's an exciting time, because we can really achieve so much more. And from my side, my perspective as more of the marketing and partnerships guy, it's interesting that previously it was kind of the tech that was holding us back, but now it's like no holds barred. You know, we can integrate as many games as that come to us, and yeah, we're not really worried about having a backlog anymore.
Jeremiah is very happy by this development.
That's awesome. Thrilled.
Yeah, formerly I had to tell games, you know, people came to us and they asked us like, oh, we want to integrate, like, let us know what we got to do. And I had to say, it was unfortunate, but you know, we don't have the capacity right now. We have a list of 8 other projects who are talking to me right now, who also want to integrate and want to move as fast as they can. And our developers are swamped. So thankfully we're working through that now. And yeah, I think the results speak for themselves.
That's awesome to hear. Yeah, whenever I hear that, I mean, usually for startups and companies, whenever you have a backlog of demand, right? I see that as a good sign, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
Speaking about the results speaking for themselves, why don't we just get out of this pitch deck and show the actual demo?
Go for it.
Okay. Honestly, we should have done this from the beginning, but you know, it's a special treat to everyone who's listening right now. This is the outcome. This is the outcome of 7 months of research and development, building, and Jeremiah absolutely killing it, getting the word out there about who we are, to the point where now we are packed, although that is now changing, and now we're able to, probably going to be launching one game a week, which is really exciting. So this is just as of last week. We've become live. We've launched on testnet, and we've sort of gone a little viral. Our announcement post has 180,000 some views, we just had 35,000 users. So
that's awesome.
That.
Wow.
Yeah. Let's show why they're here. So this is Coachilly. They are a binary options betting platform. Jeremiah, I'm going to let you run through this.
Yeah, let me share a screen. So for all everybody who's listening right now, you can go check this out. It's Coachilly, that's C-O-C-H-I-L-L-I, can you see my screen? .virtual.tech. Are you able to see this?
Yeah, yes, I can see it, yeah.
Okay, awesome. So you can see this is the price feed. Looks like the price of Bitcoin has been trading down at least over the last 30 minutes or so. So what Jose was talking about, this is the test USDC balance you have here. Here's your wallet address. You can choose how much you want to bet. So let's just say I want to bet 35 USDC. I'll choose the time frame, and then you want to start the session. So the session is started. You can see my virtual balance is from playing previously, and this is what will be reflected in your virtual wallet. And your session balance is how much you deposit. So from here, I don't know, the price has been trading down. I'll say we'll trade down to see what happens. So we'll give it a second. And well, hopefully it loads here.
So basically you make a bet, you put in the virtual balance, right? And then it should, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So basically what happens is you upload or you deposit, and then there it goes. I think it just took time for the server to connect. So you deposit, you make a bet, and you trade up or trade down. And then you see if you win, and then we'll give it 50 seconds. But you'll see as soon as this is over, and hopefully I win here, you can continuously bet. So from here, I can bet again. I have 385 left. I'll bet 35 again. This time I'll trade up. And it'll probably take time for the server to connect. But you'll notice, oh, look, a second action in game. And yet, I didn't need to connect my MetaMask again. I didn't need to pay any gas fees. I didn't need to do anything, really. All I had to do was just trade up or trade down.
Jeremiah, so why don't you show some more bets and maybe try and not lose this time? Because you know what? Our technology, it makes it easy. It makes it, does not cost any gas and does not take a MetaMask transaction or a block time, but it will not help you win. That it won't do.
Yeah, well, it's turning green now. I mean, having gone down and gone up, hopefully at least one of these will win. Let's trade up this time.
Yeah, hopefully I see. This one
pays out. Yeah. Okay, so these look like, this is the first one I lost. The second one, 10 seconds until winning. And nice. Yeah, hopefully it pays out. So you can see, I'll let these run and then I'll stop sharing the screen.
Give us another one, Jeremiah.
In between these.
Show us how zero friction experiences. What do you think it's going to do, up or down?
Let's see. I think I just bet down on this one.
This would have previously taken 4 MetaMask transactions to approve. Instead, you can now make an unlimited amount of them. And he's just once. We can bet more. And see how that balance went right back into the session balance afterwards?
Yep. So you can see how the session balance updates. And yeah, you can essentially make as many trades as you want. So now you'll see my session balance is 18, so I can't bet 41. But if I go down here to, let's say, 16... well, it looks like right now the minimum is 20, but I don't have 20 in my session balance, so I'll need to wait until... Okay, so I bet up on this one and actually the price went down. So let's see. Hopefully this one wins. And let's trade... Let's put this at... Oh, just to demonstrate the feature. Let's say I only have 18 in session balance, so I want to trade 26. If I click this, hopefully it'll tell me that... Oh, I just won, so actually... It updated before I caught that. So if I go here,
the session balance, and then it takes from your virtual balance as well. The session balance is what you have locked in that state channel, and then your session your virtual balance is what you have on the chain. So it'll actually take both of it, and it just allows for super streamlined experience. And look, we've made 6 trades now a 7th, and it didn't require any MetaMask transaction. It didn't require any gas. And the latency is a few seconds, and that's going down every day as we upgrade our, as the Coachily upgrades their server. So they're the counterpart. So right now, Coachily, the game, they have their server that is recording their paper. Jeremiah has his paper. And if either of them disagree with each other, well, they've already exchanged those signatures, and they've already had that immutable result. And yeah, this testnet launched last week, continuing to make it better and integrate into more games. But imagine if you had, say, a day trading session where you can put $10,000 into a contract and then trade Solana, trade ETH, trade NFTs, do all of these things completely zero gas. People are being driven to centralized exchanges right now because the gas cost is so much. And the only chain that has liquidity is Ethereum. And on Ethereum, gas costs are so high. This can be done on Ethereum.
Yeah.
And it would cost, say, $3, $4 to open, $3, $4 to end. But those 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 extra transactions are completely zero gas and zero friction and zero latency. And that's really important when you're doing high frequency trading. So this is the experience we enable.
Yeah, that's quite awesome. Thanks for the demo. Oh, by the way, I just want to make it clear for the audience that this is on a testnet, so there's no real money being involved. So just want to make a full disclaimer that, yeah, we're not playing with real money here. So it's
don't,
all
don't
on
gamble,
testnet.
Kids.
But yeah. Yeah, don't gamble. Yeah, I don't really condone gamble, but anyway, it's for each own. Yeah,
unless it's poker, that's not gambling. That's skill.
Yeah, poker is a lot of skill.
Yeah, so you can see, I mean, in that session, I made 8 different trades, and it didn't. You have to pay gas at the beginning, and you need to pay gas to withdraw, which I didn't show. But in between, everything is free. It's seamless. It's instant, and it's the user experience that really want to provide.
Nice.
Coachily.virtual.tech. That's Coachily with 2 L's. Go check it out.
So basically, you guys would have to integrate this to each of the game, right? If I understand correctly?
That's correct, yeah. And, you know, at the moment, just because, you know, we just launched, we're actually doing the integration for our partners. So it costs no overhead to anybody who wants to integrate at the moment. Eventually, we'll get to the point where we have so many partners integrating that you'll just, you know, they'll go to our docs and they'll handle the integration themselves. But yeah, at the moment, we're actually handling all the integrations.
And the other reason for that is
the technical
finding bugs as we go. We are we don't have very good docs because we're just focused on correcting all these bugs, making it better. So it's really useful for in terms of development to have our engineers be doing this and walking them through it.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I'm sure in the early days of startups, there's always some bugs, right? You have to deal with. But then for integration, what is typically required? Do you need to deploy a new contract if it's on a different chain, or deploy certain things? Or what is usually required for integration?
So integration is super seamless. Because it's a private ledger, we can work on any chain. And for the projects, they don't have to really change their architecture at all. It's simply a matter of like adding a few calls here and there. And then adding the user flow, like as you saw at the beginning, I had to click use virtual rollup, and that's pretty much all. Everything else like our engineers handle, and it doesn't really require any changes to the game, you know, whatsoever.
And would this work outside of EVM, Ethereum? It work on Solana and maybe on NEAR and the blockchain as well?
Yeah, it will work. Although we don't have any partners who are non-EVM at the moment.
Although stay posted for an announcement next week from possibly a non-EVM partnership. I don't know when this will come out, but stay tuned.
Nice. Yeah.
Sure. There is one actively in the works. Yeah.
Okay. Awesome. Well, that sounds like a very exciting development. So for the virtual wallet, help me understand a bit more. How do you use it? Or do you actually hold funds in it? Or is it mainly used for along with the other virtual, what is it? Virtual rollup, right? And virtual.
Yes. So
engine.
We are live now on testnet. So in the future, it'll be real funds. Right now we are on testnet and it is wallet.virtual.tech. And it has two purposes. It is first and foremost, it is a user's passport to this multi-chain ecosystem. So the user creates one virtual wallet on any chain, and then they can access the games with zero gas on any chain seamlessly. And the second is if you deposit funds there to go play those games, you will also earn yield on that. And so it is a yield-bearing asset in the sense that, say you deposit 100. If you have 100 USDC just on MetaMask, that is, you're getting killed 3.6% as those inflation numbers just came out per year. You don't want that. Instead, if you have it in a, and this is one of the promises of Web3, is to deliver the ownership of assets and therefore the responsibilities and rights to that asset, meaning yield, you are your own bank. We can deliver this because right now, in order to earn yield, you need to do something special with it. If you're just sitting in MetaMask, you're not earning anything. But if it's sitting in the virtual wallet, which is a smart contract wallet, then you are able to, say, send 95% of those funds to Lido or to MakerDAO or to Rocket Pool and have these DAO-approved specific contracts where these funds can go. And then you have 5% sitting so anyone can receive their liquidity immediately. And the rest of it is earning 4.5%, 5% on those funds. And so just by doing nothing, just by having funds and playing games, users are also earning money. And then they'll also be earning virtual points too. And I mean, that's something special. That is, it requires $40 in gas to go to Lido and to stake ETH there. And liquid staking is fun and it's great, but we can basically put a layer on top of liquid staking and on top of interest-bearing stable coins and just make it automatic. So we call it auto yield.
Okay, so basically you invest on behalf of the user who have the funds in there, is that right?
Have the option to do that or not. But yes, if you have ETH, you can opt in to do that at a theoretic zero risk. Nothing in crypto and nothing in the world is ever zero risk because Lido could be compromised, for example. So I have to add that disclaimer.
Yep.
But there's no additional risk to just staking on Lido. And 25% of ETH is on Lido. So there's that.
Yeah.
And then on MakerDAO, if you have USDC and it's there, then we don't change your asset at all. You get the USDC back. You get the ETH back. And we just send it to a place where it can earn money if you opt into that. Or you cannot.
Nice. That's very interesting way of. So I guess you have some already connection with the other protocols, or do you just have someone who actually manually doing that, or automatic for the actual goal and obtaining the yield, I suppose?
Always automatic, but yes, we do have some stuff there. Keep your eyes peeled on our Twitter for that.
So it seems like to me that everything with Virtual Lab is going so well, but I'm sure there must be some challenges that you guys face, right? Can you share with us some of the challenges facing your company?
Jeremiah, you go first.
Yeah, I think for me, I kind of touched on this briefly, but it was pretty frustrating because up to a month ago because of the backlog. So, you know, my main goal is to promote the technology and really garner integrations. And as a marketing and as the sales and partnerships person, there's only so much I can do, right? Like, you can bring your horse to water, but you can't make a drink. And I can bring partnerships to the door. I can get them to share their code. I can, you know, really explain our technology and continue to do calls. But because our engineers were handling the integration and our docs were not yet developed, there was a natural cap to what I could do and what the number of partnerships that I could actually go out and achieve. So for me, that was pretty frustrating. And I'm happy now that it seems like that issue is kind of subsiding. So yeah, we have some pretty cool things planned for the future. But I would say that was one of the big frustrations for me, kind of in Q4 of 2020.
I definitely say that is the top frustration that's been fixed now. And I'm happy to have been able to pull the trigger and hire 4 engineers in a month. So we're growing very fast. And just this last month. Other problems. I mean, challenges. We're doing these campaigns where we launched on Manta and we launched on Cochili. Cochili is the game. They use our technology and the chain is Manta. Because remember, our technology is creating a zero gas atmosphere, but it does need to settle on a blockchain. So we are decentralized, meaning we do not replace L1s or L2s. So I wanted to draw that distinction. And we want to launch on a bunch more chains. And we're right now we like to move really fast. And that means, say, we have a game ready and we have a chain ready. But the game is not on the chain. They're on a different chain. And to do these sort of announcements together, we're having sort of a mismatch right now. And we don't want to sacrifice moving fast. So we have a game that's ready, and then we have a chain that's ready next week. And we're saying, can we get that game to move their code over to the chain? And they're down for it. But we need to change the code to a Rust-based, from a Solidity-based contract to a Rust-based contract. And we're not sure if that's possible in 4 days. And we have more engineers now, but they will kill me if I make them move to a different chain in just a matter of days. So have to be
that ready. Might be tricky, I would say. Yeah.
That's one of the challenges we're facing. We're also, we're starting to do, we've been pretty B2B so far. So we're focusing on, and Jeremiah's taking the head on that, with getting games in and getting them excited. And he's done such a great job that we can't even use them all yet because we have a backlog that has lasted a long time. And we're now starting to do B2C marketing, and it's going really well. So I think we've had more impressions in the past 7 days than we have had in the previous 7 months. So this week we've had 650,000 impressions. I think we've had like something like 550 for the previous 2 quarters. And so it's going well, but I would still describe it as a challenge. Yeah. Yes, thank you. Shout out to Jeremiah and Aria on that. Huge. And to our friends at Manta as well, Kenny, for making that possible. But it is a challenge because it's not what we're used to doing. We're used to doing B2B. And so doing viral marketing, KOL marketing, that sort of stuff is just not what we're used to. And it is definitely a sort of change of pace. And then you throw in that sort of stuff with event planning. We're hosting an event in Denver, just like we met at the event in Istanbul, Workable Summit.
Yeah.
We're hosting another Workable Summit in Denver. Event planning is never something I look forward to. And so getting that all organized is a lot of work. But we've planned a lot earlier this time. We already have the venue locked down. We already have 5 sponsors and a bunch of speakers. So we're pretty excited about that. So look forward to Denver. Come see us there.
When you mentioned B2B, actually, can you share with us more about like your potential or expected business models? It's one thing that I'm quite curious about for a lot of the Web3 companies.
Oh yeah. So we have a few that are pretty cool. So the first one is straight SaaS. That's not one of the pretty cool ones. That's boring. SaaS doesn't really work in Web3. We like being partners with our integrations, and that would turn them into being customers, which is not something we're sure we want to do yet. The second way that I find very interesting is the yield way. So Cochili, as an example, which is the integration that zero gas gameplay that Jeremiah just walked through, they are going to need funds locked in our contracts in order to settle to winners, of course. And the players need to do this too. That we can all deliver yield to. But we can, for example, say, take some of that yield for ourselves. So when players are they're using this application, they're not expecting to earn yield. They just want to play the game in a zero gas, zero friction, zero latency environment. So if they're playing and they just lock their funds there, and say we have, say, 10,000 locked between the players and 10,000 locked between the game, we can earn yield on that, and no one is even expecting that. We can also, you know, give them some percentage of it, and that can be a revenue source for us. So those are sort of the first two ways. It's a virtual as a SaaS, or virtual as a bank. The third way, even cooler, is through a genuine utility token. And I say this not only for the SEC listening, But I say this also for the fact that the token follows a very similar model to Rocket Pool. So I'm a Rocket Pool staker myself, and their token model, they're actually doing some tokenomics sort of work right now. And one of the changes, their basic tokenomic model is that you need to deposit RPL in order to access their higher commission service. You need to deposit a quarter to collateralize a quarter of your ETH in RPL, so that if you get slashed, for instance, the people that are also depositing alongside you have protection, so you're over collateralized. We want to do something very similar, where say there's an application that has say 10,000 volume at one time. People are betting, there's 10,000 of the contracts. They need to buy our token and then deposit 10,000 so that if anything happens, it secures the network so that their users and the entire network are over collateralized using our token. That's just the first way. The second way that the utility token is very interesting is that you're going to have, say, chain A, Manta, and chain B, Polygon, and we want to be able to make a poker game, you know, and play multi-chain, cross-chain. Now, I glossed over how we're able to make those settlements. I just said, we play, and then we settle later. Here's how we settle. Manta and Polygon, along with the games that are supporting this application, have also deposited VRTL, and that is the source of liquidity that allows for the cross-chain transfers. And so that is the way that we will be able to derive value to the governance holders and also be our business model.
I see. Pretty interesting. So if I understand correctly, the SaaS, you would charge some the gaming company some fees, right, for using the service. And I think the banking is quite self-explanatory. And then the third way, I'm still trying to wrap my head around it, so that you get, is it additional, require additional, well, collateral, and then through your token, you can generate some more revenues. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Interesting. Okay. So I guess that hinting at in the future, there will be a token, right? Born out of this, I suppose.
Watch out for it.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, our previous testnet is all kind of eventually geared towards the token launch. I mean, it won't happen, probably won't happen soon, but eventually.
I see. Cool. Interesting. Again, guys, it's not financial advice, but do this information what you want. Yeah. But yeah, this is my podcast always been for educational and of entertainment purpose.
That's how you can use a token to provide crypto economic security and make things aligned incentives.
Okay. Okay. So yeah, with the token, I guess you can make people lock in there to help secure the network better, right?
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I think tokenomics is always a very tricky part, to be honest. I've actually researched and studied a lot of tokenomics from various different companies. And I'm sure you guys are aware of, like, in the last bull run, like a lot of the gaming company, right? I think there's a lot of these play to earn games, but the tokenomics was really bad. As in, they were not really sustainable, right? The tokenomics. So I mean, I'm hoping that in this upcoming bull market, we'll have some more interesting tokenomics around
this. Maybe the industry learns something. We'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where we also have to wait and see. Yeah. So since you guys have been expanding so fast with 11 people, have you had some fundraising already? Or are you looking to fundraise, or what's the plan on that?
Yes, sir. We raised $1.4 million last year. Last year, that meaning 2023. So only a few months ago. And we raised from OP Crypto. We raised from Manta, Near, Byzantine Marine, Koyamaki Ventures, some other technical investors and angels. Very exciting. We also went through Binance's Season 5 Incubator, and that is the makeup of our pre-seed round. And we will be also looking to raise a seed round sometime soon, this year perhaps.
Yeah, the pre-seed round announcement was pretty big for us. So that was, I think that came out in September or October. I think it was October. So that was a really exciting time. And yeah, now that the market's looking up, I think we're, Jose is mostly thinking about seed rounds. So yeah,
awesome. Yeah, excited to hear. But then with the new funding, I suppose you'd be hiring more engineers, right? building more new capabilities, I suppose. Yeah.
That's up to you.
Maybe even stay tuned. We may actually be hiring a sixth engineer in the next few weeks. Watch out for that.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's good news for those listening and also, you know, looking for a new job at the moment, I'm sure, in Web3.
If you know how to code in Rust specifically, and this, can I make this a job ad? No, I'm kidding. But seriously, if you're interested in the technology, reach out to us.
Awesome. Yeah, let's switch gear a bit to talk about some general discussion about Web3, but also feel free to plug something in with your company as well. One thing I'm always curious about is like where do you think the Web3 is heading in the next few years, or maybe in the next up until like 2030? And in that future vision of the Web3 that you see, where does your company fit in? This question is for both, by the way.
Whoever wants to go first. Web3, okay. I think Web3 really needs to find its place. So there are a lot of genuine utilities of crypto. One of them is, for example, replacing housing contracts. So if you have a lawyer who is finalizing a home deal, they are going to take the deed of the seller, and they're going to take the money of the buyer, and they're going to take them both, and they're going to act as an autonomous agent, an atomic agent, meaning that they are going to just make sure they're both there and then distribute them at the same time. That is something that is easily automatable by a smart contract, and yet no one's done it. Okay, well, actually, people have done it, but consumer sentiment is still catching up. That's one problem crypto genuinely solves. What's another problem that Web3 genuinely solves? I bought an airline ticket and I needed to cancel it, and they did not give me my money back. Well, it turns out there is a U.S. Department of Transportation law that says that if an airline ticket is canceled within 24 hours and originates, departs, or involves the United States in some way, and it's also 14 days in advance, you can cancel it within 24 hours. And I still had to spend 6 months fighting with this airline, who shall not be named, to get my money back. And I needed to involve the DA's office from my home state of Massachusetts in order to get this to happen. If you have a smart contract, where I bought the airline ticket on a smart contract, code is law. You have the law and the rules written in there, so you have terms and conditions written in there, and then you can create an interoperable system where that's not a problem, and where you aren't able to sort of make a bad customer experience and just hope people go away. Those are two genuine utilities of Web3 that, frankly, it's a shame you won't find this on the internet, because you search what's the genuine utility of Web3, and a lot of people can't give you a good answer. We need to get into mainstream adoption by providing people genuine utility with a good Web3 experience. So we're the Web3 experience part. We make it easy for you. So the buyer of an airline ticket or the home buyer does not need a MetaMask wallet, and they don't need to pay gas and all those nasty things. We make that easy. But where I think Web3, I'm not going to say where it is going to go, although I am confident, but where it needs to go, it needs to find less tokenomic-y utilities and more genuine utilities. And if we can do that, then we become a real industry. Right now, the market size for Web3 is 3.2 million. That is 40 times smaller than the market size for paper. That's pathetic. Yeah. And the reasoning for that is because we are too focused on an industry with funding and building things that have short-term gains. And so we need to do things that have prospects for the real world, and I think this will be the market cycle that will accomplish that, and I'm very excited to see it. That's my hot take.
Yeah, I think I agree with all of that. You know, in my opinion, I think Web3 is hurt by the tokenomic scams, and of course by FTX, and by the prevalence of bad actors. And I think there's this perception, like Jose said, that there is no real-world utility to crypto, to Web3. I mean, even yesterday, with the news of the Bitcoin ETF, we saw Jamie Dimon going on, like, I think CNBC, and try to rip Bitcoin and say that this is only used for, like, human trafficking and for evading taxes and trying to topple governments. Something insane. And so, this is all despite the fact that JP Morgan is backing the ETF. So clearly people think that it's not useful. It's just a get rich quick scheme and, you know, there's no utility. And I think that's the narrative that's going to change over the next 5 to 6 years, starting in 2023, but really continuing into 2024. So I think there will be more real world use cases that come up and that will become more popular. I mean, it's pretty clear already that there are a lot of big companies like Microsoft, like Sony, like Amazon, that are investing into decentralized architecture approaches. And yeah, I just think that trend is going to continue. I'm not certain that the trend of everyone and their mother launching a token is going to continue, because I think that to some extent that probably hurts the industry. But certainly blockchain itself and ZK and the underlying technology Web3 will continue to proliferate and grow in importance in the public eye.
I cry. I weep every single time I see either scam token being launched or people saying there's no utility to Web3. But having seen both at the same time, I can't blame the latter people that think that there is no utility. What about an interoperable data system where you only need one account? I will never need to remember my password again. It's decentralized identity. I never need to log in or forget my Netflix password. All one account. Interoperable data source. Or what if you have a way? Oh, I bought a ticket to the Trios tour. It was Bruno Mars, Pitbull, and Ricky Iglesias. And I was not able to sell it because of Ticketmaster's terms and conditions. So I lost $200 because I couldn't go and sell it.
Ouch.
So own my own assets. I mean, I am not only the monetary aspect of that, so it's $200, but the pain of having to go through that is saying that whether it's concert tickets or airline tickets or a way to log in everyone or saving. I didn't even mention why the lawyer thing with the housing was useful. It took me two weeks to buy this house. It took me 2 weeks for the wire to settle for all this. It would be in 5 minutes. It would be less than that if it was through blockchain. And the lawyer took 1%. Do you know how big the global housing market is? It's 180 trillion. That is 1.8 trillion in value unto itself. The value of Web3 is 3 million right now. If we replace the lawyers, 1% of 180 trillion is 1.8 trillion. That 1 million X is the value of crypto. Someone check my math. I believe it's 1 million X, the value of Web3. So do not tell me there's no value
it's
here.
A big
to
number.
Stop
it's
watching
a big number
token.
X, yeah. Yeah. I see. Yeah, it's a very interesting take. You know, sometimes I also wonder, but with those real life use cases, I'm wondering why, but I mean, there must be some reason why, right? Those businesses, they're not adopting it yet, because like, if you think about it, for the airline ticket, like you said, or the real estate, et cetera, right? I guess I think that we might not be at the point where it's ready yet for adoption, maybe.
In part, that is
by
true.
The businesses.
I think in part that's true. We're not ready for adoption. If you overlay the Web 2 internet and the Web 3 internet, I believe we're in currently 1996 or something like that. So we are still early. But also by 1996 and Web 2, the internet had applications. But also at the same time, we do have applications. You know, decentralized architecture is used in shipping logistics. Is used by Musk and very useful in the Red Sea stuff that's going on right now. It's used in some hospital logistics. But it's not used enough, and maybe that's actually okay with where we are. We're in 1996, but it's also not publicized because it's not a get-rich-quick, and so it's just technology. You know, no one is fanaticizing over AWS and, oh, look how cool cloud computing is, because it's not sexy. It's not exciting. It is useful, but people aren't talking about it as much as they're talking about NFTs and stuff like that. So we actually have seen significant progress, and those are some of the reasons why we're not seeing it more. But I'll tell you another reason why. Because this decentralized architecture is primarily useful for the consumer. Having airline tickets be easy and you can buy a Notion subscription and code is law is not useful for the enterprises. That's why we're not seeing adoption. It is only useful.
Because they want centralized control, right? Yeah.
They want centralized control. So that's why we're not seeing adoption by them. We need to force their hand. So we basically need to go up a hill, and once we're over the hill, the system is better for everyone. But to get there, to replace centralized architecture with interoperable architecture, is very cumbersome. And we need to basically build and build build momentum until they have no choice but to do this. Because right now, Notion, American Airlines, they're not going to do this because it weakens their control. So you need a system that is better for both parties. Otherwise, you will have bargaining friction and you will not be able to make a negotiation.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I mean, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about at the very beginning of the conversation, which is who in their right mind would want to use the technology that currently requires you to pay a transaction fee every single time you go to do something that requires this insanely complicated onboarding of having a wallet, memorizing keys, understanding how to, you know, what gas is in the first place, understanding which token to use on which network. I mean, currently the technology and the user experience is far too complicated. And for industries and companies that, you know, their objective is to maximize profits, surely this would only like hurt their existing user base. So yeah, right now it's just the fact that, you know, it doesn't make sense. But I think we're going to continually see that change. And I think as Web3 gets more advanced, as the user experience becomes more simplified and more friendly, to the point where it actually helps companies earn profits, then, you know, we'll probably see it take off from there.
Yeah, for sure. I think, but I think many companies are still in the early days of experimenting with Web3. So I guess, just like Jose said, we were like in the, 1996, right? Or maybe before the .com, or maybe after, even after the .com bubble. I don't know. I feel like three cycles already married the maybe after post 2000, right? I feel like we'll more like in 2001.
You never think so? The .com bubble. It means we were big enough to matter. It means we actually achieved utility. So I'm looking forward to the .com bubble of Web3.
That's a good analogy, actually, because usually the way I thought that we already like passed the .com bubble because, you know, there's already a lot of explosion, right? I mean,
yeah,
with FTX, with a bunch of other, you know, exchanges and lending protocols that just went upside down. So I just thought that was like the bubble type of thing. Yeah.
Anyway, more
but
years.
Yeah, if... Five more years, okay. Yeah, looking forward to it. That'll be two more cycles then.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. I'm really excited for what's to come, that's for sure. I mean,
yeah.
But also I had another thought. There are other applications that even I use that I didn't even realize were blockchain. So one of them is called SoRare. They are a football trading game. And you don't even know they use blockchain because you shouldn't know it uses blockchain. That's the whole point. You have to make it so the user, the person doesn't know. And they have real people and I have friends who use it and they don't even know it's on blockchain. That's how it should be. They're only one of a few, but it proves it's possible. It proves you can have a genuine, sustainable business model with real users. They don't care about, you know, everything else. I mean, even I'd even say Friends Tech is another example of a genuine use case. Social media. I mean, you can decentralize Twitter, censorship resistance. I mean, there are so many things you can do. So yeah. We'll have our .com bubble.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know if I should look forward to that or not. Anyway, so I think that segues us perfectly into one of my show signature question I like to ask people. So as builders, marketers, founders, like what can we do to onboard 1 billion people into Web3?
We can go to wallet.virtual.techno. But seriously, I mean, our thesis is we need to onboard the first billion. So I see us as a puzzle piece to that. We are one part of the quadrant, and that is enabling, removing and eliminating gas fees, latency, and wallet pop-ups. But using virtual's technology, you still need a wallet. You still need to record a seed phrase. You still need to log in with MetaMask. We may remove the need to use MetaMask in the middle of the gaming application, so you're able to immerse yourself in the application, but we don't eliminate it. That's where our partners at Biconomy come in, Account Abstraction. That's where load balancer technologies come in. That's where people who are making layer twos cheaper, such as like ZK Sync and using a privacy preserving technology. That's where they come in. That's where crypto education comes in. For example, Near. Near is another consumer use case. Sweatcoin is an application on Near where you can get money by walking. That fractionalization at low gas fees Do you know how long it would take for every microtransaction? Do you know? Let me rephrase. Do you know how much it would take for every microtransaction if you had to use that on a Visa, like fiat transfer? You need to fill in your credit card information every time. You need to do your zip code. You need to get approved. All for like a 0.01 cent transaction that Visa is going to take 3% of. You can't do that on Visa and MasterCard. You need to use blockchain. Yeah. So that's why they use Near. And now some of my friends actually have Near wallets. And so that is that's another use case. So I see that as some technology. So basically, consumer marketed technologies of people like Sweatcoin, like SoRare, that are really marketed towards the consumer. Even the thing they were doing with like the Battle Arena streamers thing that had NFTs in it that everyone found out and freaked out about, I find that very unfortunate because I think the NFTs should be hidden. It shouldn't be a marketed thing. It should be a thing that you experience without even realizing it's an NFT. So stuff like that needs to be done more, and eventually consumer sentiment will improve. That, I think, is probably our biggest battle. And then technologies like account abstraction, like ZK state channels. It's the goal.
Nice. So yeah, consumer sentiment and technology, well, improvement and adoption, right? Thank you.
Yeah. I think, in my opinion, you know, coming from, like, I haven't been as ingrained in the Web3 space as Jose, it really is reputational. I think a lot of people don't want to even explore crypto and explore the Web3 space because as soon as they do, they think, oh, like SBF, or they think of like people being rug pulled or people losing, you know, many millions of dollars because of the volatility. And I think to reach 1 billion people, like a significant portion of the globe, yes, it's technological improvements. Yes, it's fixing the user experience. It's gaining more real-world utility. And I also think it's fixing that association with people who are bad actors, people who are criminals, and who don't have good intentions. And I feel like we get to that point by really offering superior products and by gaining trust. I mean, even in the early days of the internet, you know, hacking was super prevalent. And I'm sure there were people who, you know, didn't want anything to do with it out of fear that they were going to lose their life savings.
Internet is
a fact. It's probably how some people feel now. Yeah. And so it's probably how people feel now. And, you know, I think improving the security architecture goes a long way to gain trust. And it builds over time. So we need to avoid more catastrophes like FTX collapsing.
You know what I want to see in 2024, or I want to see soon? It is the first non-crypto company to launch a token. Here's what I mean by that. Imagine Uber. Take the analogy of Uber. Okay. There are three components to any company, right? There are the investors and the founders and the employees. There are the users, and then there's sort of the entity of the company itself. I'm going to tell you how if Uber was to decentralized launch a token, it would be superior for every single one of those parties. And as I talked about earlier with The Hill and convincing enterprises, if it's beneficial for every party, then it will happen. So I think this is what's going to enable sort of Web3 utility. So let me explain what I mean. So say there's a small company called Uber, and then they start, and then they instead of not launching a token like they did in our real world, they launched a token. Now they have a token. This is better for the founders and the investors, pretty simply. They have earlier access to liquidity at an ICO or an IDO, which happens in 2 years instead of an IPO at 10. So you have faster access to liquidity and return on your investment, which speeds up innovation by 5 times from 10 years to 2. Okay, so it's better for the founders and the investors. Okay, but how is that better for the users? It's better for the users because early users are actually able to benefit and grow with the company. So if I say buy, instead of Uber Cash, which is what they have now, which is sort of a fiat token, they actually have a token that can appreciate in value. And so early users are rewarded, which, by the way, also benefits the company. Uber fought for 5 years to get approved in Frankfurt and in Bogota and in Laos to get the taxi unions to win there. But guess what? If they had a token, they could have aligned incentives with their users so that their users could have been their marketers and that the government officials there would have actually had a way to benefit. The taxi unions could have actually easily purchased a part of Uber to hedge their bets. So you're actually able to align incentives in a fractional way. That's how it's better for the company. It, it basically, hypothetically, and we haven't actually seen this, we've hypothetically, you have a way for the small, unknown, great companies to rise to the top. And you're able to have a faster acceleration than Uber fighting against any of them. And it's better for the users also at the end of the day. So it's better for the early users because they can appreciate and grow alongside the company. It's also better for the users when the token stops growing. And sort of you'll see, hypothetically, again, see a growth like this, and eventually the token will not grow anymore. Or it'll grow at, you know, the discount rate, which is 5% a year. Sort of like it'll represent their share value. It's beneficial for them because they can pay 50% less because the founders and the investors have already earned their investment. So now it's a DAO. It's owned by everyone, meaning Uber doesn't need to charge 50% fees, which means it goes right to the driver who earns more, the employees. It goes to the consumer, pays more. And by the way, a little bonus, you're not paying 3% in Visa fees because it's a blockchain.
Impressive. You know, I like how you have actually like thought through all of the tokenomics for a, you know, let's say fictional Uber or fictional Web3 Uber or something like that. You know, it's funny. I was in India last month, I think, attending the India Blockchain Week, right? And I actually met through a company who claims themselves to be the Web3 Uber, right? Ooh. Yeah, but I think they're still in like very early day, right? So maybe we may actually see them like that. When I asked them, like, so how's your tokenomics work? They actually told me, like, okay, we're still in like they're still using the Web2 technology, meaning they're still charging user by, you know, credit card and all the UPI. But they said that the Web3 stuff is in the works, right? I mean, I can't blame them. It's very hard, I think.
Very
it's tricky, right? It's tricky, yeah. It's not that easy. So, but yeah, maybe given some more time, we may actually see Web3 Uber come to real life, right?
Which is like with the utility. Connect them with me. I'll do their tokenomics for free. And as an added bonus, Virtual will integrate with them and will solve the complicated blockchain stuff for them. That's what we do. We make it easier for the developer to integrate.
Yeah, yeah. I think that'd be pretty awesome. Yeah, because I think, like I said, tokenomics is a very difficult part, right? Because you have to think about, like, not only for one party, but for all the parties involved, right? And also, yeah, it's just a very tricky topic. So I feel like you need a degree in PhD in mathematics and economics combined to come up with something good, sustainable, right?
No degree here, Yale dropout.
I'm sure you read a lot of books to qualify yourself for like a graduate level student already. Yeah,
I listen to podcasts. That's what I do.
Awesome. Well, thank you.
Yeah, no degree needed. I think you just need to be ingrained in the space, keep track of trends, and you know, I think when we launch our own token, we'll be pretty happy with the way that it's designed.
Awesome. Yeah, looking forward to that. Is it something you guys still designing at the moment? Right, it's not like the final tokenomics is not publish it, I suppose.
Nothing is ever final. You've actually heard extra details in here that are not public elsewhere. So we want to focus on, I think, something that other companies should do too is focus on the actual product, the utility, the users, to make them happy, and then you work on the token. So we don't want to drown ourselves yet in tokenomics, although people will be able to look forward to a token soon after our seed round.
Nice. Awesome. I think which segues perfectly into the final section of our podcast. So just two more questions here for both of you. I guess first one is for Jose, do you have any advice for future Web3 founders? And then for Jeremiah, I mean, same question, but advice for people who want to break into Web3 from Web2 or from whatever other industry. Jose, you can go first. Yeah.
I have a lot of advice. Generally, you don't know what you don't know. So there are a bunch of mistakes you're going to make and you don't know what they are. So you just have to be prepared to just try things and don't worry about sunk cost fallacy. So you just do things. I mean, this company started because I wanted to build poker on chain and then just ran with it. And it became like six different things before it became what it is now. So that's one. I'd also say, don't be afraid of failure. You know, overused quote, but failure is not, your success is not defined by lack of failure, but by moving from failure to failure without a lack of enthusiasm, right? So that's very important. And this is all general advice, not Web3. You use your advisors and bring on great advisors, but you will outgrow them. And outgrowing an advisor and looking back at previous mistakes, those are two telltale signs you're doing the right thing. Other stuff for Web3 specific. I would say be active in your Discord. You should be your customer experience officer. Customer experience officer is what I have in my bio instead of CEO, because that's what you should be.
Okay.
You have to be prioritized on the happiness of your users. So you have to be in there in the front.
Don't be afraid to get your hands dirty. You're going to sacrifice a lot in the beginning. That's general advice. Okay, Web3 specific advice. I'll think about some as Jeremiah goes.
Yeah, the reality is I didn't have much background in Web3 like this time last year. And when I first started to really kind of get onboarded and learn about the industry, there's just so much. I mean, you're being inundated in information and in new topics. And the reality is a lot of it is explained and worded exceptionally poorly. People who are in Web3 have no idea how to describe what they're actually doing. And for a long time, that was actually us as well. Like, we've spent a lot of time working on the marketing and on the explanation and just how do you even explain what it is you're doing. I mean, something as simple as like a wallet and as a bridge, if you go online, you'll find many descriptions. Or we actually had an internal debate about L2s. Like, if you go online and you look up the definition of L2s, there are conflicting definitions. And so it makes it very hard for people who are not in the space whatsoever, who don't know anything, to actually learn about what it is. And I've found over the, you know, the past couple of months, the best thing to do is instead of going online and reading what is an L2, what is a chain, just do it yourself. If you have experience actually using a wallet, actually bridging, actually playing a decentralized game, that's the best way to understand what it is, because you're going to find that whatever explanation there is, it's probably incorrect or outdated or more confusing than it needs to be. So yeah, the best thing is just to kind of get your hands dirty. It's the best way to actually understand what's happening.
I still haven't thought of any specific Web3 advice, but I think that's natural because, you know, Web3 is not its own unique fortress. It is just another industry. But the stuff I could find that was closest to that is go to conferences. It matters in any industry, but specifically in Web3, go to conferences, meet people, have those one-off interactions, and be your genuine self. Don't try and shill. Just talk with people and engage them, and we're all here because we're like-minded. Then you can talk about work. Second thing is write a blog. Get your opinions and thoughts out there. Attract people. Get in the spaces. There is a sort of a zero-to-one thing that happens. You're either not in the community, and then you're in it all of a sudden. And the way to do that is just by publishing stuff, then getting a friend to retweet it, and then you just sort of start following people on Twitter, and then you do that. And the third piece is probably the least Web3 specific, but cold email. The trick with cold emailing and getting those one-off connections that help so much, you know, we're all told that acquaintances are more useful than friends because you're more likely to have a one-off job interview or project introduction from an acquaintance than you are from a friend who shares all of your same connections. To get those acquaintances, you cold email. To cold email, you should filter, get a 200 people that you think you can message, filter it down to 10. It's not what you write, it's who you write to. That's what I got. Stuff all I've done. Those are the right things I've done. And I won't tell you the wrong things I've done.
Interesting. Well, I mean, yeah, feel free to share if you want to. But then, actually, one thing I'm curious is, we will ever see poker game on-chain? Is that still in the roadmap somewhere?
Sooner than you think.
Yeah, okay. Looking forward to it, actually. Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Yeah.
Much sooner than you might think.
Excited for that. Yeah. I mean, if whenever launch line, let me know. I would probably go on there, sign up, play some games of poker. Yeah. On blockchain. Actually, to be honest, so I also met another person who was actually running like a putting chess on the blockchain online. It's like entirely. So I guess like a lot of these games that we play in real life, right? Yeah. Eventually, probably. Maybe come on chain. Maybe we will see Monopoly or I don't know, chess or maybe Chinese chess or some other thing online someday.
We can do it all, and we will.
Hopefully, hopefully one game a week. I mean, that's the goal. Probably starting soon. I don't know. We'll get there.
One game a week. Okay, so we have like 50 more games to look forward to for this year, right? If I do my math correctly.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's the goal. You know, of course, it's important to aim high.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, all over here. Bye. Awesome. Well, thank you for being on here. Final question is that where can people follow you as a person, and then you as your company? So feel free to share any handles or username here, and I'll make sure to put it in the show notes. But yeah.
So you can follow Virtual Labs on Twitter. It's really where we post our updates and are most active. That's 0x Virtual Labs. I don't use my personal Twitter all that frequently, but it's JeremiahKim23. And Jose, I believe your Twitter username is Jose Betan with an N court. Is that right?
Bet and court. So Jose.
Oh, bet and court. Bet okay.
And court. Three words. All together. And yeah, 0x Virtual Labs. And same with our Discord, is just discord.gg/virtual labs. Look out for scammers there. Always stay safe online. People are trying to impersonate us and me, so make sure you're talking to the real person. I will never ask for funds, so neither will virtual. So be careful out there.
So you know what they say, when you're happy, people impersonate you, it means you have become famous.
Yeah. I don't know about that, but
it's true. I think it's true. You know, so I think you guys are getting famous if you're getting impersonator, because I have not get any impersonator from myself yet. So
not yet.
That's how I know. Not yet. Yeah. Exactly. Well, I don't know. Yeah. Anyway, but yeah. That's
also, shout out to our website. It's virtual.tech, like TECH. So go check out our website. You can see our integrations there. Our demo, our blog is there, our team is there. I mean, really, that's where all of our information is kept. So
awesome. Yeah, I'll make sure to put all the information about the, you know, website, the Coachy Lee website, or your Twitter in the show notes as well. So look forward to that. Once again, thank you for being on the podcast today, Jeremiah and Jose. It's been awesome. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Make sure your shirts.
Yeah, thank you. This is a shirt I got from the... In Turkey when I went to visit the team event. So yeah, if you guys attend the team event,
was it in Denver? Yes, sir.
Yeah, we're going to Denver.
Yep, East Denver.
Awesome. Thank you for being on.
Thank you. Really appreciate it being on.
Yeah.
This is fine.
Awesome. And we are back to my studio. What do you guys think about this episode with Jose and Jeremiah? Please leave your comment below so that Jose and myself will make sure to be reading it. As for me, I'm very excited about the slick UX that the Virtual Lab will be bringing to Web3. As promised, as a token appreciation from the Virtual Lab team for sticking until the end, you can go to this website, worldlit.virtual.tech, and use the code Colors of Web3. That's, again, that's the name of my podcast, Colors of Web3, to obtain your virtual wallet. For the next episode, we'll be talking to Kanish Khurana, Head of Developer Relations at Flink, a Web3 infrastructure company whose mission it is to make it easy to build websites and apps on the new open web. If you guys like this episode, please like and subscribe for more content like this. Thank you for listening and see you next time.